Fritz was strong, and he was not. Voss licked his lips as he stalked toward Akos again. He kicked, hitting Akos's armored side, and again, this time driving the toe of his boot into Akos's jaw, he sprawled flat on his back, covering his face with his hands, and groaned. The pain made it hard to think, hard even to breathe. Voss laughed. He bent over Akos, grabbed the front of his armor, and pulled him half off the ground. Flecks of his spit hit Akos's face as he spoke.
"In whatever life there is to come, give your father my greetings."
This, Akos realized, was his last chance. He put his hand on Voss's throat, not even grabbing, just touching, the best he could do. Voss gave him that startled look he'd given before, that pained look. He was bent, leaving a strip of skin exposed beneath his armor, right over the waistband of his pants, and while Akos was touching him, forcing him to feel pain again, he drew the knife he kept in the side of his boot and stabbed with his left hand up under the armor into Voss's gut. Voss's eyes were so wide Akos saw the whites around his bright irises. Then he screamed. He screamed, and tears came into his eyes. His blood was hot on Akos's hand. They were locked together. Akos's blade in his flesh, his hands on Akos's shoulders, their eyes meeting. Together they sank to the ground, and Voss let out a heavy sob. It took Akos a long time to let go. He needed to make sure Voss was dead. He thought about his dad's button in his mom's hand, its sheen worn away by his fingers, and pulled his knife free. He dreamt of killing Voss Kuzar so many times. The need to do it had been a second heartbeat in his body. In his dreams, though, he stood over the body and raised his knife to the sky and let the blood run down his arm like it was a wisp of the current stream itself. In his dreams, he felt triumph and victory and vengeance, and like he could finally let his dad go. In his dreams, he didn't huddle near the cell wall, scrubbing at his palm with a handkerchief, shaking so badly he dropped the cloth on the glowing floor. Voss's body looked so much smaller now that he was dead. His eyes were still open halfway, and so was his mouth, so Akos could see Voss's crooked teeth. He swallowed down bile at the image, determined not to throw up. "Ori," he thought. So he stumbled toward the door and started running.
Chapter 37. Syra. Rizek took his hand away from his stomach. Beads of sweat dotted his forehead, right by his hairline. His eyes, usually so piercing, were unfocused. But then his mouth drew down in a frown that was unexpectedly vulnerable. "It's you who made a mistake," he said, in a higher, softer voice than I had ever heard from him. It was a distinct voice, memorable. Aija's voice. How could both Rizek and Aija be living in the same body, surfacing at different times? "By forcing his hand." His hand? The sound of the crowd around us had changed. No one was even looking at Rizek anymore. All heads were turned toward the raised platform from which he had just descended, where Aija Karaseth now stood alone with a woman in front of him, a knife held at her throat. I recognized her, not just from the footage of the kidnapping that had played on screens throughout the city the day she was taken, but from the past day of watching Issei Benazit talk, laugh, eat. This was her double, Orieva Benazit, face unscarred.
"Ah, yes, this is the blade I was waiting for," Rizek said with a laugh, his natural voice returning. "Syra, I'd like you to meet Orieva Benazit, Chancellor of Thuve."
Her throat was purple with bruises. There was a deep cut in her forehead. But when our eyes locked across that substantial distance, she didn't look like someone who was afraid for her life. She looked like someone who knew what was coming and intended to meet it with a straight back and a steady look. Did Rizek know she wasn't really the Chancellor? Or had she convinced him she was? Either way, it was too late. Too late. "Ori," I said. "In Thuvazit," I added. "She tried to come for you." I couldn't tell if she heard me. She was so still.
"Thuva is just a playground for the Shotet," Rizek said. "It was easily penetrated, its chancellor effortlessly taken by my faithful servants. Soon, its chancellor will not be the only thing we take from it. This planet is ours to be claimed." He was rallying his supporters. Their roar was deafening. Their faces twisted with glee. The mania made the current shadows wrap around my body, tight as ropes binding a prisoner, and I flinched.
"What do you think, Shotet?" Rizek said, lifting his head to the crowd. "Should the Chancellor die at the hand of one of her former subjects?"
Ori, still looking at me, didn't make a sound, though the amplifier drifted so close to her head it almost hit Aija, the one who carried my brother's horrors inside his head. The chant began immediately.
"Die! Die! Die!"
Rizek spread his arms wide, like he was basking in the sound. He turned slowly, beckoning more and more of it, until the thirst for Ori's death felt like a tangible thing, a weight in the air. Then he held up his hands to quiet them, grinning.
"I think it's Syra who will decide when she dies," he said.
He lowered his voice a little.
"If I fall, if you don't supply me with an antidote of some kind, she will fall too."
I said weakly, "There is no antidote." I could save her. I could tell Rizek the truth. The truth I had told no one, even Akos, as he begged me to preserve what little hope he had left for his brother, and delay her execution. I opened my mouth to see if the truth would come out, despite my paralysis. If I told Rizek the truth, if I saved Ori's life, we would all be trapped in this amphitheater, surrounded by a sea of Rizek's supporters, with no victory to claim for the renegades. My mouth was dry. I couldn't swallow. No, it was too late for Orieva Benazit. I couldn't do it. I couldn't save her without sacrificing us all, including the true Chancellor of Thuva. Rizek swayed, and I stepped forward, weapon outstretched, to meet him as he fell. I thrust the knife, and his weight dragged us both to the ground. High above us, Aija Karaseth, curly-haired, wide-eyed, and gaunt, drove the current blade into Orieva Benazit's gut and twisted it.
Chapter 38. Akos. As Ori collapsed, Akos heard a blood-curdling scream. Rizek fell on his side, his arms crossed in front of his body and his head limp against the dirt. Syra got to her feet, knife in hand. She had done it. She had killed her brother, and the last hope for Aija's restoration. Issei was shoving her way through the crowd as everything turned to chaos. She was clawing, her teeth gritted, fighting her way to the platform. Akos hoisted his body over the arena barrier and sprinted across the dirt, past Syra and Rizek, over the other barrier and into the crowd again. People elbowed and kicked and pressed, and his fingernails came away red with somebody else's blood, and he didn't care. Up on the platform, Ori grabbed Ija's arm to hold herself up. Blood sputtered from her lips as she tried to breathe. Ija hunched over her, holding her elbows, and together they dropped to the ground. Ori's brow wrinkled, and Akos watched, not wanting to interrupt.
"Bye, Ija," she said, her voice caught by the hovering amplifier.
Akos bent low and barreled into the last of the crowd. Children screamed someplace far away. A woman moaned as someone trod on her. She couldn't get up, so people were just running over her. When Issei got to Ija and Ori, she threw Akos's brother back with a roar. In half a tick, she was on top of him, her hands around Ija's throat, and he didn't seem to be moving, even though she was choking him to death. Akos didn't move right away. He just watched her do it. Ija had killed Ori. Maybe he deserved to die.
"Issei,"
Akos said with a croak. "Stop." Ori was reaching for her sister, fingers straining at the empty space. It was only when Issei saw it that she let go of Ija and crouched next to her sister instead. Ori held Issei's hand tight to her chest, and their eyes met. A small smile, then gone. Akos pushed his way onto the platform, where Issei was bent over Ori's body. Ori's dark clothes were wet with blood. Issei didn't cry, or scream, or shake. Behind her, Ija was, for some reason, lying still, eyes closed. A shadow passed over them, the renegade ship glowing orange, yellow, and red, coming to their rescue, piloted by Geo and Sifa. Tekka was already crouched over the control panel on the right side of the platform. She was trying to pry the screen away from the rest of the mechanism, but her hand was trembling around the screwdriver, so she kept losing the screws. Finally, Akos drew his knife and forced it between screen and mechanism, pressing them apart. Tekka nodded her approval and jammed her fingers inside to disable the force field. There was a flicker of bright white as the force field winked out. The transport ship sank into the amphitheater and hovered as low as it could go without crushing the seats. The floor hatch opened over them, and the steps came down.
"Issei," Akos shouted, "we have to go."
Issei gave him a look that was like poison. She put her hands under Ori's arms and tried to drag her toward the ship. Akos went to Ori's legs to help, but Issei snapped,
"Hands off her."
So he stepped back. By that time, Sisi had made it to the platform, and Issei didn't yell at her. Together they carried Ori's body up the steps to the ship. Akos turned to Ija, who hadn't moved from where he was when Issei tackled him. When Akos shook his older brother's shoulder, he still didn't move, so Akos touched his fingers to Ija's throat to make sure he was still alive. And he was. Strong pulse. Strong breaths.
"Akos!"
Syra shouted from the arena floor. She was still next to Rizek's body, knife in hand.
"Leave it!"
he shouted back. "Why not just leave his body to carrion birds and Noavek loyalists?"
"No!"
Syra said, her eyes wide, urgent.
"I can't!"
She held up the knife. He hadn't looked close before. All he had seen was Rizek's body limp and Syra standing over it with blade drawn. But when she gestured toward the weapon, he saw that the blade was clean. She hadn't stabbed Rizek. She hadn't stabbed him. So why had he collapsed? Akos remembered Suzao's face hitting his soup in the cafeteria, and the guard outside the amphitheater door going limp, and it was obvious. Syra had drugged Rizek. Even though he knew Syra was more than Rizek's scourge, or even Rizek's executioner, even though he had seen the better parts of her, getting stronger in the worst environment possible, like the hush flower that bloomed in the deadening time. Somehow, he'd never considered this possibility. Syra had spared Rizek for him.
Chapter 39. Syra. The hatch door of the renegade ship closed behind us. I checked Rizek's pulse before untying the rope from his chest. It was weak, but steady, just as it was supposed to be. Given the timing of his fall, and the strength of Akos's sleep blends, it would be a while before he woke. I hadn't stabbed him, though I had taken great pains to make it look as if I had, in case anyone was watching closely on the sights. Ema Zatsivis had disappeared in a pale blue flourish in the chaotic aftermath of the challenge. I wished I had gotten the chance to thank her, but then she hadn't poisoned Rizek for me. She had believed it would kill him, as I had led her to believe it would. She probably would have hated my gratitude. And when she found out that I had lied to her, she would hate me more than before. Issei and Sisi crouched on either side of Ori's body. Akos stood behind his sister. When she snaked her hand back to reach for him, he was already stretching toward her. They clasped fingers, Akos's gift freeing Sisi's tears.
May the current, which flows through and around each and all of us, living and past, guide Orieva Benezit to a place of peace,
Sisi murmured, covering Issei's bloody hands with her own.
May we who live hear its comfort clearly, and strive to match our actions to the path it sets for us.
Issei's hair was stringy and wet with spit, sticking to her lips. Sisi brushed it away from her face, tucking it behind her ears. I felt the warmth and the weight of Sisi's current gift, settling me into myself.
May it be so, Issei finally said, apparently closing the prayer.
I had never heard Thuvazit prayers before, though I knew they spoke to the current itself, rather than its alleged master, like the smaller Shotet sects. Shotet prayers were lists of certainties rather than requests, and I liked the honesty of Thuvazit tentativeness, the implicit acknowledgement that they didn't know if their prayers would be answered.
Issei stood, her hands limp at her sides. The ship lurched, sending us all off balance. I didn't worry that we would be pursued across the skies of Voa. There was no one left to order it.
You knew, Issei said, looking up at Akos. You knew he had been brainwashed by Rizek, that he was dangerous. She gestured to Aija, still lying unconscious on the metal floor. From the very beginning. I didn't think he would ever... Akos choked a little. He loved her like a sister. Don't you dare say that to me. Issei bent her fingers into fists, her knuckles turning white. She was my sister. She does not belong to him or to you or to anyone else. I was too distracted by their conversation to stop Tekka from kneeling next to Rizek. She put her hand against his throat, then his chest, sliding it under his armor.
Syra, Tekka said in a low voice, why is he alive?
Everyone, Issei, Sisi, Akos, turned to Tekka, their tense moment broken. Issei looked from Rizek's body to me. I stiffened. There was something threatening about the way she was moving, speaking, like she was a coiled creature ready to strike. The last hope for Aija's restoration lies in Rizek, I said, as calmly as I could. I spared him for the time being. After he returns Aija's memories, I will happily cut out his heart myself.
Aija,
Issei laughed, and laughed again, madly, looking at the ceiling.
The drug you gave Rizek put him to sleep. Yet you chose not to share this with him when my sister's life was threatened?
She stepped toward me, crushing Rizek's fingers under her shoe.
You chose the dim hope of a traitor's restoration,
she said, low and quiet.
Over the life of a chancellor's sister. If I had told Rizek about the drug, we would have been trapped in that amphitheater with no leverage and no hope of escape, and he would have killed your sister anyway, I said. I chose the path that guaranteed our survival.
Bullshit, Issei leaned close to my face.
You chose Akos. Don't pretend it's any different than it is.
Fine, I said, just as quiet. It was Akos or you.
I chose him. And I don't regret it.
It wasn't the whole truth, but it was certainly true. If simple hatred was what she craved, I would make it easier for her. I was used to being hated, especially by the Thuvazit.
Issei nodded.
Issei, Sizi began, but Issei was already walking away. She disappeared into the galley, closing the door behind her. Sizi wiped her cheeks with the back of her hand.
I can't believe this. Vas is dead, and Rizek is alive, Tekka said.
Vas was dead? I looked at Akos, but he was avoiding my eyes.
Give me a reason not to kill Rizek right now, Noavek, Tekka said, turning to me. And if that reason is something about Karaseth, I will hit you.
If you kill him, you won't have my cooperation in whatever plan the renegades concoct next, I said dully, without looking at her. If you help me keep him alive, I'll help you conquer Shotet.
Yeah? And what kind of help would you be exactly?
Oh, I don't know, Tekka, I snapped, finally breaking my spell to glare at her. Yesterday, the renegades were just squatting in a safe house in Boa, clueless. And now, because of me, you're standing over the unconscious body of Rizek Noavek with Voa in utter chaos behind you. I think that suggests my capacity to help the renegade cause is considerable, don't you?
She chewed on the inside of her cheek for a few seconds, then said,
There's a storage area below deck with a heavy door. I'll toss him in there so he doesn't wake up on us.
But she shook her head.
You know, wars have been started over less. You didn't just make her angry. You enraged an entire nation.
My throat tightened.
You know there was nothing I could have done for Ori, even if I had killed Rizek, I said. We were all trapped.
I know that, Tekka sighed. But I'm pretty sure Issei Benazit doesn't believe it.
I'll talk to her, Sizi said. I'll help her see it. Right now, she just wants people to blame.
She shed the jacket she wore, leaving her arms bare and covered with goosebumps, and draped it over Ori. Akos helped her tuck the edges under Ori's shoulders and hips, so her wound was hidden. Sizi brushed Ori's hair into place with her fingers. They both left then. Sizi to the galley, and Akos to the hold, with heavy footsteps and trembling hands. I turned to Tekka.
Let's lock my brother up.
Tekka and I dragged Rizek and Aija to separate storage rooms, one by one. I rooted out more sleeping elixir to drug Aija. I wasn't sure what was wrong with him. He was still unconscious and unresponsive. But if he woke up as the same warped man who had murdered Ori Benazit, I didn't want to deal with it yet. Then I went to the nav deck, where Sifa Karaseth sat in the captain's chair, her hands on the controls. Geo was nearby, using his screen to contact Jorek, who had returned home after Rizek fell, to get his mother. I sat in the empty chair beside Akos's mother. We were high in the atmosphere, almost past the barrier of blue that separated us from space.
Where are we going? I said.
Into orbit until we make a plan, Sifa said. We can't go back to Shotet, obviously, and it's not safe to go back to Thuva yet.
Do you know what's wrong with Aija?
I said. He's still catatonic. No, Sifa said. Not yet.
She closed her eyes. I wondered if the future was something she could search, like the stars. Some people had mastery over their gifts, and some people were simply servants to them. I had never stopped to wonder before which category the Oracle of Hesse fell into.
I think you knew we were going to fail, I said softly.
You told Akos that your visions were layered over each other, that Ori would be in the cell at the same time Rizek faced me in the arena. But you knew they weren't, didn't you? I paused.
And you knew Akos would have to face Vas. You wanted him to have no choice other than to kill him, the man who murdered your husband.
Sifa touched the AutoNav map so the colors reversed, black for the expanse of space and white for the route we were taking through it, and sat back in her chair, her hands in her lap. I thought she was just waiting to answer me at first, but when she didn't say anything for a while, I realized she had no intention of doing so. I didn't press her. My mother had been intractable too, and I knew when to give up. So it surprised me a little when she spoke.
My husband needed to be avenged, she said. Someday Akos will see that.
No, he won't, I said. He'll only see that his own mother maneuvered him into doing the thing he most hates.
Maybe, she said.
The darkness of space wrapped around us like a shroud, and I felt calmer, consoled by the emptiness. This was a different kind of sojourn, away from the past, instead of away from the place I was supposed to call home. Here, the lines between Shotet and Thuvazit were harder to see, and I almost felt safe again.
I should check on Akos, I said.
Before I could get up, her hand had closed over my arm, and she had leaned close enough to me that I could see streaks of warm brown in her dark eyes. She flinched, but didn't pull away.
Thank you, she said. I'm sure that choosing mercy for my son over revenge against your brother was not easy for you.
I shrugged, uncomfortable. I couldn't very well free myself from my own nightmares by bringing Akos's to life, I said. Besides, I can handle a few nightmares.
Chapter 40. Akos. After the Shotet took Akos and Aija from their home and dragged them across the divide, after Akos broke free from his wrist cuffs, stole Kalmev Rodix's knife, and stabbed him with it, after they beat Akos so badly he could hardly walk, they took the Karaseth brothers to Voa to present them to Rizek Noavek. Down the cliff face and through the dusty, winding streets, sure they were both about to die or worse. Everything had been too loud, too crowded, too little like home. As they walked down the short tunnel that led to the front gate of Noavek Manor, Aija had whispered, "I'm so scared." Their dad's death and their kidnapping had cracked him open like an egg. He was even oozing, his eyes always full of tears. The opposite had happened to Akos. No one cracked Akos. "I promised Dad I'd get you out of here," he'd said to Aija. "So that's what I'm going to do, understand? You'll make it out. That's a promise to you this time." He'd put his arm over his older brother's shoulders, pulled him tight to his side. They walked in together. Now they were out, but they hadn't walked out together. Akos had had to drag him. The hold was small and dank, but it had a sink, and that was pretty much all Akos cared about. He stripped to the waist, his shirt too stained to salvage, made the water as hot as he could stand, and worked the greasy soap into lather in his hands. Then he stuck his head under the faucet, Salty water ran into his mouth. As he scrubbed his arms and hands, scraping at the dried blood under his fingernails, he let himself go. Just sobbed into the stream of water, half horrified and half relieved. Let the splatter sound drown out the strange, heaving noises coming from his own mouth. Let aching muscles shudder in the heat. He wasn't really upright when Syra came down the ladder. He was hanging on the edge of the basin by his armpits, his arms limp around his head. She said his name and he forced himself to his feet, finding her eyes in the cracked mirror above the faucet. Water ran in rivers down his neck and back, soaking the top of his pants. He turned the water off. She reached over her head to drag her hair to one side. Her eyes, dark as space, went soft as she looked him over. Current shadows floated over her arms, draped themselves across her collarbone. Their movements were languid. "Vas?" she said. He nodded. In that moment, he liked all the things she didn't say more than the things she did. There was no good riddance, or you did what you had to do, or even a simple it will be all right. Syra didn't have the patience for that kind of thing. She fell on the hardest, surest truth again and again, like a woman determined to crush her own bones, knowing they would heal stronger. "Come on," was all she said. "Let's find you some clean clothes." She looked tired, but only in the way a person was tired when they'd had a long day at work. And that was another thing about her, too. Because so much of her life had been hard, she was steadier than other people when hard things came. Maybe not in such a good way, sometimes. He pulled the stopper out of the drain so the reddish water disappeared, izzet by izzet. He dried off on the towel next to the sink. When he turned toward her, the current shadows went haywire, dancing up her arms and across her chest. She winced a little, but it was different now. Not so all-consuming. This was a Syra who had a little space between her and the pain. He followed her up the ladder again, down the narrow hall to the storage closet. It was stuffed full of fabric, sheets, towels, and at the bottom, spare clothes. He pulled on an oversized shirt. It felt better to be wearing something clean. By that time, Syra was on her way to the nav deck, empty now that the transport ship was set to orbit. Near the exit hatch, his mom and Tekka were wrapping Ori's body in white sheets. The galley door was still shut, his sister and Issei inside. He stood at Syra's shoulder at the observation window. She'd always been drawn to sights like these, big and empty. He couldn't stand them, but he did like the winking of the stars, the glow of far-off planets, the dark red-purple of the current stream. "There is a Shotet poem I like," she said in clear Thuvazit. He'd heard her speak just a few Thuvazit words in all the time they'd spent together. That she spoke it now meant something. They were on equal footing, in a way they couldn't have been before. She had just about died to make them that way. He frowned as he chewed on that. What a person did when they were in pain said a lot about them. And Syra, always in pain, had almost given her life to free him from Shotet prison. He would never forget it. "The translation is difficult," she continued. But roughly, one of the lines reads, "The heavy heart knows that justice is done." "Your accent is very good," he said. "I like the way the words feel." She touched her throat. "It reminds me of you." Akos took the hand that was on her neck and laced his fingers with hers. The shadows snuffed out. Her brown skin had turned dull, but her eyes were alert as ever. Maybe he could learn to like the big empty of space if he thought of it like her eyes, soft dark with just a hint of warmth. Justice is done, he repeated. That's one way of looking at it, I guess. It's my way, she said. Judging by your expression, I assume you've chosen the path of guilt and self-loathing instead.
I wanted to kill him, he said. I hate that I wanted to do something like that.
He shuddered again and stared at his hands, all cracked from hitting things, the same way Voss's had been. Syra waited a while before responding. It's hard to know what's right in this life, she said. We do what we can, but what we really need is mercy. Do you know who taught me that? A grin. You. He wasn't sure how he'd taught her about mercy, but he knew the cost of it for her. Mercy for Aija, and sparing Rizek's life for the time being, meant she had to hold on to the worst of her pain for even longer. It meant trading triumph at last for Issei's anger and the renegade's disgust. But she seemed at ease with it still. No one knew how to bear other people's hate like Syra Novavec. Sometimes she even encouraged it, but that didn't bother him so much. He understood it. She really just thought people were better off staying away from her. What? She said. I like you, you know? He said. I know. No. I mean, I like you the way you are. I don't need you to change. He smiled. I've never thought of you as a monster or a weapon or... What did you call yourself? A rusty... She caught the word nail in her mouth. Her fingertips were cool, careful as they ran over the scars and bruises he wore, like she was taking them back. She tasted like sendis leaf and hush flower, like salt fruit, and like home. He put his hands on her, sighing into her skin. They got bolder, fingers laced with fingers, knotted in hair, taking in fistfuls of shirt, finding soft places nobody else had ever touched, like the bend in her waist, like the underside of his jaw. Their bodies pressed together, hip bone against stomach, knee against thigh. Hey, Tekka yelled from across the ship. Not a private place, you two. Syra rocked back on her heels and glared at Tekka. He knew how she felt. He wanted more. He wanted everything.
Chapter 41. Syra. I descended the stairs that led beneath the renegade ship to the hold, where my brother was locked in one of the storage rooms. The doors were solid metal, but each one had a vent near the low ceiling so air could circulate through the ship. I approached his room slowly, running one finger along the smooth wall. The lights flickered above my head as the ship shuddered. The vent was at eye level, so I could see inside. I expected Rizek's body to be limp on the floor next to bottles of solvent or cans of oxygen, but it wasn't. At first, I didn't see him at all, and I gulped air, frantic, about to scream for help. But then he stepped into my line of sight, his body cut into stripes by the blades of the vent. Still, I could see his eyes, unfocused but full of contempt. "You're more of a coward than I thought you were," he said in a low growl. "It's interesting being on this side of the wall this time," I said. "Be careful, or I will be as unkind to you as you were to me." I held up my hand, letting smoky current unfurl around it. Tendrils of ink darkness wrapped around my fingers like hair. I ran my nails along the vent, lightly, marveling at how easy it would be to hurt him here, with no one to stop me. Just the opening of a door. "Who did it?" Rizek said. "Who poisoned me?" "I already told you," I said. "I did." Rizek shook his head.
No, I've been keeping my ice flower blends under lock and key since the first assassination attempt that you participated in. He was almost, but not quite, smiling. And by lock and key, I mean a gene lock, accessible by Noavek blood alone. He waited a beat. Locks that we both know you were, and are, unable to open.
My mouth dry. I stared up at him through the narrow space. He had security footage of the first assassination attempt, of course, so he had likely seen me trying to open the lock on his door with no success. But it didn't seem to surprise him.
What do you mean? I said, quiet.
You do not share my blood, he said, pronouncing each word deliberately. You are not a Noavek.
Why do you think I started using those locks?
Because I knew only one person would be able to get through them. Me.
And I had never tried to get past them before the assassination, because I had always kept my distance from him. Even if I had, I was sure he would have kept a convincing lie ready for the occasion. He was always prepared to lie.
If I'm not a Noavek, then what am I? I said sharply.
How should I know? He laughed.
I'm glad I was able to see your face when I told you. Emotional, volatile Syra. When will you learn to control your reactions?
I could ask the same of you. Your smiles are getting less and less convincing, Reese.
Reese, he laughed again. You think you've won, but you haven't. There are things I haven't told you, your true parentage aside.
Within me, everything was turbulent. But I stood as still as I could, watching his lips part in that smile, his eyes crinkle at the corners. I searched his face for a sign of shared blood, and found none. We didn't look alike, but that in itself was not strange. Sometimes siblings took after different parents, after distant relatives, bringing long-forgotten genes back to life. He was either telling me the truth, or he was playing with my mind. But either way, I would not give him the satisfaction of seeing me react any further.
This desperation, I said in a low voice, does not become you, Rizek. It's almost indecent.
I reached up and pressed the vents flat with my fingertips. But I could still hear him as he said,
Our father.
He paused and corrected himself.
Lazmet Noavek is still alive.
Chapter 42. Akos. He looked out the observation window at the dark sky. A strip of Thuva showed on the left, white with snow and cloud cover. No wonder the Shotet had named the planet Urek, which meant empty. From up here, its blankness was the only thing about it worth noting. Sisi offered him a mug of tea, yellow-green. The blend for fortitude, judging by its shade. He wasn't any good at mixing that one, since he'd spent most of his time working with Hushflower to put people to sleep and to kill their pain. It didn't taste like much. Bitter like a new stem freshly snapped, but it made him steadier like it was supposed to.
How's Issei? He asked her.
Issei is... Sisi frowned. I think she heard me, on some level, beyond her grief. But we'll see. Akos was sure they would, and probably not what they wanted to see. He'd seen the hate in Issei's face as she glared at Syra near the hatch door, her sister's body laid out behind her. One talk with Sisi couldn't take away hate like that, no matter how much warmth there was between them.
I'll keep trying, Sisi said.
That is the distinct feature of all my children, their mom said, climbing the great steps to the nav deck. They are persistent, to the point of delusion, some might say. She said it with a smile. She had an odd way of complimenting people, their mother. He wondered if she had been counting on his delusional persistence when she arranged for them to get to the prison too late. Or maybe she really hadn't counted on Ija interrupting her plans with some oracle maneuvering of his own. He would never know. "Is Ija awake?" he asked her. "Awake? Yes," Sifa sighed. "But just staring blankly for now. He doesn't appear to hear me. I don't know what Ori did to him before. Well..." Akos thought of the two of them, Ija and Ori, on the platform, clutched together. The way she had said goodbye, like he was the one leaving instead of her. And then he had. Slipping away just because she touched him. What could Ori's touch do? He never asked her. Sifa said, "We'll have to give it time. And see if we can use Rizek to restore him. I think Syra had a few ideas for that." "I bet she does," Ceezy said, a little darkly. Akko sipped Ceezy's tea and let himself feel something like relief. Ija was out of Shotet. Ceezy and Sifa were alive. There was some peace in knowing that all the men who had invaded their house and killed their father were gone now. They were marks on his arm. Or they would be when he got around to carving Voss there. Their little ship rotated, showing less of Thuva and more of the space beyond it, all dark but for the speckle of stars and the glow of a distant planet. Zold, if he remembered his maps right, which was not a guarantee. He'd never been much of a scholar. It was Issei who broke the quiet, marching out of the galley at last. She looked better than she had a couple of hours before. She had pulled her hair back tight and found a shirt to replace her bloody sweater. Her hands were clean, even under the fingernails. She crossed her arms and took a wide stance at the edge of the nav deck platform. "Sifa," she said, "pull us out of orbit and set the auto nav for assembly headquarters." Sifa sat in the captain's chair and said, shooting for casual and winding up at nervous, "Why are we going there?" "Because they need to see firsthand that I'm alive," Issei gave her a cold, appraising stare. "And because they will have a cell that can hold both Rizek and Ija until I decide what to do with them both." "Issei," Akko started, but there was nothing to say that he hadn't already said. "Don't test my patience. You'll find it has limits." Issei had gone full chancellor. The woman who had touched his head and told him he was Thuvazit was gone now. "Ija is a Thuvazit citizen. He will be treated like one, just like the rest of you. Unless, Akos, you would like to declare your Shotet citizenship and be treated the same as Miss Noavek." He was no Shotet citizen, but he knew better than to bicker with her. She was grieving. "No," he said, "I wouldn't." "Very well. Is the auto nav set?" Sifa had pulled up the nav screen, which floated in little green letters in front of her, and was typing in coordinates. She sat back in her chair. "Yes, we'll arrive in several hours. Until then, you will make sure that Rizek, Noavek, and Ija are kept under control," Issei said to Akos. "I have no interest in hearing from either of them. Understand?" He nodded. "Good. I will be in the galley. Let me know when we begin our approach, Sifa." Without waiting for an answer, she marched away again. He felt her footsteps vibrating through the floor grate. "I have seen war in every future," his mom said out of nowhere. "The current guides us there. The players change, but the result is the same." Ceezy took their mom's hand and then Akos's. "But we're together now." Sifa's troubled look gave way to a smile. "Yes, we are together now. Now." For just a breath, he was sure, but it was something. Ceezy rested her head on Akos's shoulder. and their mom smiled at him. He could almost hear the feather grass scratching at their house's windows in the wind, but he still couldn't quite smile back. The renegade ship arced away from Thuva. Up ahead he saw the cloudy pulse of the current making a path through the galaxy. It bound all the planets together, and though it didn't seem to move, every person could feel it singing in their blood. The Shotet even thought it gave them their language, like a tune only they knew, and they had a point. He was proof of that. But he still felt heard. Only silence, otherwise. He put his arm across CZ's shoulders and caught sight of his marks, turned out toward the light. Maybe they were marks of loss, like Cyrus said. But standing there with his family, he realized something else. You could get things back. We hope you have enjoyed this unabridged production of Carve the Mark by Veronica Roth. This program was produced by Skyboat Media. The director was Cassandra DeCure. Executive producer, Caitlin Gehring. Text copyright 2017 by Veronica Roth. Production copyright 2017 by HarperCollins Publishers. All rights reserved. Thank you for listening.
Audible hopes you have enjoyed this program.